Chapter 6. Passion. When Ezra Standish returned to his quarters at the end of his duty shift, he had no great expectations for the evening. He knew Julia would be on duty in engineering for several hours, ensuring everything was in perfect working order before she left with him for a week in Pacifica. As Ezra prepared for a quiet evening inside his quarters with only a copy of his favorite book, Chaucer's Canterbury Tales, Ezra could not deny how much he would enjoy their sabbatical away from the ship. Peeling off his clothes, he stepped into the shower cubicle, thinking he was just tense enough to try the water showers Vintaner enjoyed so much. Sonic showers were more efficient, but even Ezra confessed they weren't as refreshing, and he needed refreshing more than ever right now. Among the senior staff, only Ezra's relationship with Julia was free of any emotional baggage. While everyone on board knew the captain and the protocol officer were involved, their passion for each other, though burning like a white-hot flame, lingered on long wistful looks, occasional hand-holding, and the notes of concern they showed each other during crises. Vintaner and Alexandra Stiles' relationship was in an even greater state of limbo. They were lovers in every sense of the word, separated by a thin sheet of glass created by Vulcan physiology. As chief security officer, Ezra was aware they sometimes spent their nights together. While he could only speculate what took place between them, Ezra supposed Vin enjoyed having Alex next to him when he woke in the morning. Just as Alex needed his comfort to sleep. He understood Vin's sentiments because he wouldn't mind spending the night with Julia if their relationship progressed that far, which it did not. It might incense a lesser man that he and Julia had yet to consummate their relationship. Ezra only needed to look in her eyes and know it was mostly because she was afraid. For all her self-confidence, she was as unsure of herself as any woman entering the most important relationship of her life. Julia loved him, and knowing that filled him with the happiness, devoid for most of his life. However, she was hesitant about approaching the most intimate expression of her feelings for him and feared ruining things between them by entering those uncharted waters prematurely. At first, Ezra did not mind waiting because he enjoyed being with her even without intimacy. Unfortunately, he was a man with needs, and, try as he might, the ability to contain them was fast slipping out of reach. They burned beneath his skin, demanding release. By now, his passion for Julia was almost frenzied, but he forced himself to wait because he loved her too. Beads of refreshing hot water running over his body proved Vin right about bathing this way. Soaping himself up, he indulged himself under the hot spray, relishing the warm steam against his wet skin. Strange how this most primitive ritual could soothe the tension out of one's body with such ease. He was washing his face when the cubicle door slid open, making him jump out of his skin until an even more astonishing sight shocked him back into it again. It was Julia. Beautiful, naked Julia, stepping into the shower with him. Ezra did not speak for a few seconds as his eyes traveled down from her face, rapidly moistened by the spray as she entered the narrow space with him. Her creamy white neck, full breasts, and the mound of dark hair beneath her flawless belly sent a surge of desire racing through him.
Julia!
Ezra gasped. She did not waste any time showing what she wanted of him when she reached for the soap and lathered her hands.
I thought I'd join you, Commander.
She whispered in his ear as she leaned forward, closing the distance between them.
Are you sure?
He prayed she was, because Ezra wanted her so badly right now he could barely stand it. Anticipation building so fiercely inside of him he thought he might explode there and then. Her soapy hand answered his question.
Oh.
Ezra groaned, feeling every inch of her palm dragging over his flesh. His hand pressed against the sides of the cubicle, bracing himself while her lips brushed his bare chest, planting soft kisses against the slippery skin.
Oh, my lord,
he whispered. Ezra never imagined having her touch him could feel so good. They had kissed, and those makeout sessions aroused him so much he barely made it back to his quarters, but this was beyond his imagining. Julia did not speak. She continued to torture him until Ezra was so incoherent with need he could barely think. Ezra reached for her, trying to touch him when Julia moved away, looking at him with a smile loaded with sin.
I have something better in mind.
She lowered herself onto her knees. His gut tightened in anticipation as she took him. The contact of warm, wet heat against his flesh forced the security chief back against the wall, his jaw going slack with pleasure. Ezra's fingers snaked through her hair, watching the crown of auburn fire as she lavished him so exquisitely. He was groaning out loud and not even caring, but he wanted to care. He loved Julia. As much as he wanted her to finish him, Ezra wanted to be with her when that moment came. Slowly fighting the delightful feel of her, Ezra placed his hands on Julia's shoulder and started pulling her gently to her feet. For a moment, Ezra noticed bewilderment in her eyes, as if what he just did was wholly unexpected. As soon as they were standing face to face, Ezra crushed her lips with a kiss of ferocious passion. What she had just done to him was beyond belief. Her mouth opened beneath his, allowing Ezra to plunge past her teeth and begin a fierce duel of tongues as he continued to devour her lips like a man starved for an eternity. Pushing her to the glass wall of the cubicle, Ezra groaned at the feel of her body against his. He fought the need to take her there and then, restraining himself because he wanted to take it slow. This was a big step for her, and Ezra wanted Julia to know he understood that. His hands caressed her body, the slick feel of water, making him feel every perfect curve with heightened sensation. He heard her whimper softly as his fingertips lavished the same attention she had given him a few minutes ago. His mouth slid over the soft, creamy skin of her neck, never imagining it could taste so good. She was utterly incredible, Ezra thought to himself, reveling in the sensation of her taut body against his own. Aware the writhing sensations rippling through her with each soft cry expressed her own need for him.
Julia,
Ezra whispered, biting and tasting her flesh. She arched languidly against him, her hands digging into his back at his touch. Ezra wanted no woman as much as her, and each time he felt her groan, he slipped closer to the point of no return. She melted in his hands like soft butter before he straightened up to return his lips to hers. His journey back was slow and deliberate, kissing places on her body unaccustomed to such ministrations and felt her shudder with sensation each time he made contact.
Ezra, please. I need you.
A groan of complete surrender escaped him when he obliged her. The punishing journey to be fully coupled damn near broke him. His breath caught at how beautiful she looked when they became one. The glassy expression, the full lips slightly parted, and her heaving breath while clawing at his back. Ezra wished the moment would never end.
You feel incredible?
He grunted as he looked into her eyes. Ezra never imagined it could be this wonderful. His was a soul jaded. He knew that. Poets and dreamers often overrated how incredible it could be to make love to someone you love. None of his past relationships were equal to that claim. However, he could not deny his feelings for Julia were different. From the first moment he saw her, Ezra knew he loved her and would until his dying day. Her ability to make him see things with awe and wonder rekindled something inside his cynical core, long forgotten. The heat they generated inside the shower cubicle was proof of it. It was so intense, he wondered how the water was not turning into steam when it touched their skin, and he thought the only thing he would do tonight was read.
Miss Pemberton,
Ezra remarked when he could breathe again.
You are full of surprises tonight.
She did not look at him, choosing to keep her head buried against his wet chest.
The night is not over, Ezra.
A shudder of renewed arousal ran through him at the thought of an entire night like this.
Since I am not needed elsewhere, I think I can accommodate you.
Where in the hell was Ezra Standish when you needed him? Chris Larrabee wondered as he peered gingerly past through the doors of Holodeck 1 to see if there were any signs of danger in the corridor beyond it. People going about their business, walking along the carpeted floor to one part of the ship or another, oblivious to his attempts to avoid danger should he choose to emerge from his hiding place for the last few hours. This was ridiculous. He was the captain of a starship, for God's sake. There had to be an easier way to deal with a girl who had a crush on him. Chris entered the corridor and made a beeline towards the turbo lift, hoping to get there before any young women accosted him with more than his coffee and status reports. He spent the last 3 hours hiding inside the holodeck, running the Old West program he liked so much where he was the man in black. In that holographic world, the only person he had to deal with was outlaws, not some young girl whose feelings he was afraid of hurting when he refused her again. Chris tapped his foot anxiously, waiting for the turbo lift doors to open. His mind continued to race at what he would do about this situation. Not only did he need to let Casey down gently, but he would also have to face JD and explain to the kid this was not his fault. Chris did nothing to lead Casey on. Even if JD believed him, the young man would still be hurt because he was pretty hung up on the girl. The doors slid open, and Chris prepared to flee if Casey was inside it waiting for him. Fortunately, the only person inside was Buck Wilmington.
"Hey Chris,"
Buck greeted with a grin when Chris stepped inside the lift. "Didn't I leave you in command?" Chris recognized the smirk on his face all too well. "Computer, deck 10.
"I left the con in JD's hands,"
Buck replied, still smiling.
"It was pretty quiet up there, and the kid can handle it."
Chris agreed with that. JD was more than capable of taking care of things in the interim, and if something came up beyond his experience, JD possessed enough sense to let them know about it.
"Okay, I know that look. Which unfortunate ensign, lieutenant or whatever, did you score with this time?"
"Oh no, Chris."
Buck looked at him reproachfully but still kept the smirk on his face.
"A gentleman doesn't kiss and tell."
"A gentleman doesn't, but we're talking about you. Don't make me make that an order, Commander."
Chris needed the distraction, even if it was the tale of Buck's latest conquest.
"All right,"
Buck conceded defeat.
"Let's just say Alex is coming out of her shell."
"You're dreaming."
"Alex?" That was about as likely as a Klingon deciding to take up ballet dancing.
"You would have better luck turning gold into lead than you would with Alex."
"I thought so too,"
Buck admitted readily, but the last few hours proved otherwise.
"But apparently today, the lady was more accommodating."
He was not joking. Chris knew Buck well enough to know when his oldest friend was kidding, and Buck's expression was genuine. If Buck did hurdle that impossibility, then he had every reason to be so smug.
"You slept with Alex, Commander Stiles?"
"Hey, I am as shocked as you are, but the woman was extremely hard to ignore."
Buck's eyes missed it over as he relived how hard he climaxed on the desk of the captain's office before remembering who he was talking to. Perhaps he should omit that bit of the story for Chris's benefit.
"She just took me. I had no choice in it."
"She took you? You're telling me Alexandra Stiles just came up to you and fell into your arms, just like that?"
Chris tried to wrap his mind around the idea and found it impossible. While Alex and Buck were friends with the lady, respecting the man enough to work exceptionally well with him, Alex abhorred Buck's mating habits. She thought him a pig, and it was a running joke how she would often voice it.
"Not into my arms, more like on her knees."
A sly grin sneaked across his face.
"Oh my god."
Chris's jaw dropped open in shock, uncertain whether it was from astonishment or envy.
"And you and her?"
"Three times, the first on."
Buck paused a moment, collecting his thoughts before resuming his tale of debauchery.
"On the desk in my quarters, and then twice on the bed. I thought I knew something about pleasing women, but that girl just rode me until I thought I was going to die."
He sighed wistfully, his body still warm with satisfaction at the memory.
"But what a way to go."
"Buck."
Chris jabbed him in the shoulder.
"How could you do that to Vin?"
"Vin?"
Buck exclaimed, hurt that Chris would think he had not considered Vin.
"I told her that, but she said that she couldn't get what she needed from Vin, and it meant nothing. She just wanted a good time. I'm sure if Vin was up..."
Chris shot him a murderous glare.
"Choose another word, Commander."
"Sorry,"
he said sheepishly and continued.
"I'm sure if Vin could give her what she needed, she would have gone to him. As it was, all she wanted was a little loving from someone who could make her feel good. What's the harm in that?"
"The harm in that, Commander, is that Vin won't see it that way. He is in love with her. Hell, we all know that. Sure, he isn't mature enough to do anything about it, but you can tell that just by how he looks at her. How do you think he will feel knowing you gave her what he couldn't? It's bad enough the man has an inferiority complex the size of a red giant without you having to make him feel worse."
And he thought he had an explosive situation with Casey and JD. This paled in comparison. The magnitude of Chris's words and the far-reaching consequences of his actions penetrated.
"Chris!"
"Don't Chris me!"
the captain yelled, genuinely angry.
"You're my oldest friend, and I love you, Buck, but I am also captain of this ship, and you should have had the sense enough to say no. I don't know how things are going to be once Vin finds out about this."
"I will talk to Vin."
Buck was grasping at straws to fix the situation, even though the damage was done irrevocably. Buck did not regret what he had shared with Alex. She was incredible. Alex must have been a passionate woman before the Cardassians did their worst. Yet even as he made love to her, Buck sensed something was holding her back, as if she did not entirely trust him enough. He lavished 10 kinds of pleasure upon her, and while it was his name she called an abandon, Buck guessed it was Vin she wanted but was not so selfish to mind. For Buck, there was nothing finer than making a woman feel good. Whatever the reason.
You better, Chris growled when the lift brought him to his destination. Because I don't need to remind you just how pissed off Vin can be.
With that, Chris stepped out of the lift, leaving Buck to his thoughts. Chapter 7. Doctor's Orders.
How much farther?
Nathan asked Crane as he looked up the long tunnel of the Jefferies tube once they escaped the turbolift. It was only a matter of time before the intruders would come looking for them and, even if they didn't, he and Rain couldn't remain where they were while the Maverick was being overrun. It was likely the bridge did not know what was going on yet. By the effort the enemy placed in keeping them trapped in the turbo lift, the taking of the Maverick depended on getting around Chris Larrabee. Nathan could understand their trepidation. The captain missed nothing, and a full frontal assault by the enemy would only make the commander of the Maverick react with extreme prejudice, resulting in equally harsh consequences if they failed. Besides, Chris could shut down the bridge with a word, which was why the invaders chose a subtle attack. If luck was with Nathan and Rain, it was likely the enemy would leave the bridge until last, giving the duo time to warn the senior staff before the invaders made their move to take it. Nathan had yet to determine if it was indeed an alien entity or some unknown space dementia that took over the female crew of the Maverick. All he knew for sure was no other Starfleet vessel had encountered it. Worse yet, three of the Maverick's senior officers were female and had easy access to the bridge, where their actions would remain unquestioned until it was too late. Alexandra Stiles was affected, being the first to encounter the artifact. Disengaging the turbo lift and leaving it in limbo could only be achieved by Julia Pemberton, and Mary Travis' relationship could be easily used to get past the captain's guard. Beads of sweat ran down his back, and his arms ached as they continued to climb up the maintenance rungs running above their abandoned turbo lift. The ascent was arduous and a long way from their destination. While Nathan possessed enough Starfleet survival training under his belt for the climb, he was more worried about reaching the bridge safely than the distance they needed to scale. Beneath them, the turbo lift sat dormant because of its deactivation, but if it were to move again, there would be no escaping its path.
Another 12 decks,
Rain replied, studying her surroundings closely. Although one level looked no different to Nathan than any other, Rain's operational expertise allowed her to distinguish them. Operations staff were required to learn every nook and cranny of the ship, and it was a requirement of being transporter chief.
Rain.
Nathan glanced anxiously down at the lift.
What would happen to us if the turbo lift moves?
You mean before or after we get crushed to a pulp?
Never mind. That answer just painted a picture that speaks a thousand words.
Rain knew she ought not to be teasing him because he was unaccustomed to this kind of labor, not to mention forced to solve a problem that did not require him being in front of a microscope for hours on end.
Relax,
she assured him, primarily out of guilt.
You don't have to worry. The minute it looks like the lift is going to be activated, safety alert signals any personnel conducting maintenance to get clear.
What if the alert protocols are disabled?
Normally, emergency lights activate through a different system, so they remain unaffected by tampering. Why do you ask?
Rain pulled herself up to another rung and felt the ache to her toes. They had climbed quite a distance, and though she was fit enough to endure it, if she survived today, she would pay for it tomorrow.
Emergency lights.
Nathan mused before lapsing into silence as he continued climbing.
Yeah, there are about a dozen procedures in place for anything to function on board a starship. If I told you how many backup relays and safety precautions I have to take with transporting people, you'll never again worry about having your atoms scrambled. A group of Starfleet engineers get together just to see how much abuse they can hurl at everything that gets put on a starship, and then try to imagine what they can come up with that's completely beyond anything one might experience in space.
How comforting. So these little lights that have just flicked a light on the top side of the turbo lift are nothing to worry about.
Rain froze.
Lights?
She winced inwardly.
Yeah.
Nathan indicated the small bulbs that just flickered on. They didn't do much except light up the roof and were nowhere bright enough to illuminate the tunnel in any way helpful to them.
About a second ago.
Oh.
She nodded and scanned the area to determine where they were before she told him they were in trouble. 12 decks and still nowhere close to the bridge, but, she realized with relief, they were only a few rungs from deck 16.
Nathan?
The nearest deck doors were only a dozen or more rungs away.
What?
Something in her voice made him look up instantly.
Start climbing.
Below them, a low hum echoed up the shaft,
Oh hell.
Nathan quickened his pace as he scrambled up the ladder after her. The turbo lift was still motionless, but Nathan was not about to look behind him for visual confirmation.
Don't worry,
Rain called down as she puffed up the rungs.
It has a 2-minute initialization protocol when it's forced to make a cold start.
Oh, how nice.
Nathan growled as he hauled himself up another rung, keeping his eyes focused on the doors leading to the nearest deck. He didn't care where they ended up, as long as he avoided being crushed to death by a speeding turbo lift.
We're almost there,
she cried out as the doors that led to salvation came into sight.
We're only a few meters away.
Suddenly, the turbo lift heaved into action and raced up the shaft. Nathan didn't think he could climb so fast as he and Rain scrambled upwards, trying to outrun the certain death coming at them. Rain was not even thinking in sentences as her brain's impulses moved so quickly her actions upon reaching the emergency exit lever of the doors were almost reflex. She tore open the lid of the small compartment housing the level and yanked it to and with one mighty tug. The lever snapped to the other side with a gasp of hydraulic gases before the doors hissed open above her. Rain covered the remaining distance just as she saw the turbo lift charging towards Nathan with barely a second to spare. With the same reflexes, she rolled onto her knees and reached down to grab the doctor by his Starfleet uniform and pulled him towards her. Nathan toppled over the edge to land against the deck as the lift displaced the air within the shaft by its sudden ascent. Nathan collapsed on top of her. For a few seconds, both could only lie there shaking. Meanwhile, the lift came to a halt at the open doors, returning to its normal state, inviting passengers to climb on board.
That,
Nathan said once his stomach had returned to the correct place in his abdomen,
was too close.
In more ways than one.
Rain grumbled, waiting impatiently for him to get off her. While this might be fun at another time and place, at the moment, she felt decidedly vulnerable.
Oh.
Nathan realized where he was. Actually, he had about 60 seconds ago, but after what he had been through, what with being almost mashed to death by a runaway turbo lift, he figured, what the hell?
Sorry.
I'm sure you are.
Rain replied with utter disbelief since the glimmer of mischief dancing in his eyes gave him away. Nathan rolled off her and rose to his feet before helping her do the same. They both spent a few seconds dusting themselves off and trying to regain their composure after their near-death experience.
We're near sick bay,
Nathan exclaimed once he realized where they were.
I was going to save the surprise for our anniversary, but gosh darn it, you got it out of me, Nathan Jackson.
Nathan smiled at her for a moment. There and then, he decided his life had changed, and she would be a big part of why. Despite their present circumstances, it was a good feeling.
We can go find Josiah.
He strode towards the counselor's office.
If I know that man, he'd be working right until we got to Pacifica.
Unless some woman has blindsided him, and he's mating like a rabbit.
Hey, I don't need that picture in my head.
He scolded and then realized it was not an impossibility. After all, Josiah was just this morning telling him about Audrey and their upcoming trip to Pacifica. It was not long before they arrived at the counselor's office with no one accosting them on the way. Nathan wondered if there were orgies taking place across the ship and dismissed it. Sex was only the bait. A person was wide open for subjugation when exposing themselves to that most primitive instinct. No doubt, many men on board were now incapacitated. Those who weren't were probably trying to decipher the odd behavior of the female crew. The doors to the counselor's offices did not open when Rain and Nathan approached. In all the time Nathan served on board the Maverick, those doors were never closed. Josiah had an open door policy towards all his patients and would speak to anyone no matter how late the hour. However, as Nathan repeatedly tried to activate the entrance, it parted for neither of them.
They must have him too,
Nathan grumbled with frustration.
They're everywhere, Nathan,
Rain said, assuaging his exasperation.
Let's just hope he's okay.
Nathan?
A muffled voice suddenly spoke from the other side of the door.
Is that you?
Josiah? It's Nathan. Let me in.
Is that a woman with you?
Yeah, Lieutenant Rain Null. Josiah, I know what's happening, and she's not a part of it.
Are you sure?
Will you open the damn door before we both get carted away by whoever's got the ship?
Rain barked with impatience. Nathan frowned at her, preferring a more diplomatic approach. Nevertheless, her blunt demand worked because the door soon slid open.
Now that's a request I can believe.
The counselor peered cautiously up and down the corridor as Nathan and Rain hurried past him. As soon as they were inside, Josiah sealed the doors again. He exhaled loudly, his paranoia expunged at seeing a friendly face.
It's good to see you, brother.
Josiah crossed the floor to a compartment behind his desk to fish out the bottle of Romulan ale. He needed a drink and suspected Nathan probably did too.
What the hell are you doing hiding in here?
I was hiding from Audrey at first.
Josiah confessed as he poured them a drink. Before he could do the same for Rain, the lieutenant gestured she did not require the libation.
Then I started noticing everyone else. I thought I might contact the bridge and see if they had some idea of what was happening, but communication with the bridge is down. I can't seem to access Chris or any of the senior staff.
This was hardly a surprise to Nathan.
We're locked out too. Something has taken over all the women on board this ship. We're under attack, only the bridge doesn't have any idea.
What, a virus or something?
No, I don't think it's a virus.
It started with the artifact we beamed on board the ship.
Rain added her voice to the discussion.
Nathan thinks something from it affected Alex, and then Alex infected the rest of the ship.
What about you?
The counselor inquired, not out of suspicion but curiosity.
You're definitely not infected. If you were, you'd be all over Nathan.
All in good time, but first we've got to save the ship.
Josiah grinned and looked at Nathan.
I like her.
She grows on you.
Nathan gave Rain an affectionate smile before getting back to the business at hand.
We haven't worked out what they are yet, but I think it's communicable by touch. They tried to pass it on to Rain, but she suffered some kind of neural overload. I think it has to do with the symbiote inside her.
Whatever it is, it's widespread but not overt, not unless you really look. People are still going about their business, but you can feel something is going on.
It was Josiah's business to notice such behavioral variations in the crew, all of whom were potential patients at some point or another. As counselor, he had the most contact with everyone on board the Maverick. Starfleet and civilian.
The bridge, as far as I can see, would have to be isolated.
But the captain would notice things,
Rain remarked.
I mean, that man can tell by the hum of the transporter whether an EPS conduit or a relay is down. I'm transporter chief, and I still need a diagnostic tricorder to make that call.
Chris was holed up in the holodeck for hours for some reason.
When Josiah couldn't reach the bridge, he attempted to contact the rest of the senior staff and got nowhere. If he wasn't trying to dodge Audrey, who had become rather fervent in her pursuit of him, Josiah would have attempted to reach the captain in the holodeck.
The captain is in the holodeck.
Nathan could not believe Chris would indulge in simulated recreation while intruders were on board.
Don't tell me he's with someone.
Mary, perhaps?
No, he's alone but unavailable.
It's them.
Rain looked at both men.
They're finding some way to keep the bridge crew off balance. I'll bet if you tried to contact all the senior staff, you'd find that they're indisposed.
They might not even have the slightest clue until it's too late,
Josiah exclaimed worriedly. He was new to intruders and space battles, having spent most of his career on Earth. Now, more than ever, he felt completely out of his depth and unaware of what to do. It was a disheartening state of affairs for a counselor.
We need a specimen,
Nathan suggested since no one else had a better idea.
We need to find out what it is exactly that has taken over the women and reverse it somehow.
That's easier said than done. There seem to be a lot of them under the influence.
He's right. Remember how we ended up in the turbo lift? They were a mob.
We better get to Sick Bay. If they decide to come through here, you won't be able to stop them. Sick Bay uses an independent system linked to the warp core. They can't disrupt our power or systems unless they shut down the main engines, and they aren't likely to do that without Chris screaming bloody murder. Besides, there's a level 10 force field in Sick Bay, not to mention phasers.
Charming. I knew this morning was going to be eventful.
True,
Nathan teased as they started out the door.
You get hit on by a beautiful school teacher, and now you get to save the ship.
Yeah, I'm definitely living the dream.
The corridors to Sick Bay remained quiet, and Nathan supposed the enemy did not classify it as a high priority area even though its chief physician might be an inconvenience. As the trio rounded the corner, they saw Lieutenant Richmond standing guard at the front of the Sick Bay entrance, obviously left there if Nathan or Rain attempted to return there.
How are we gonna get past her?
Josiah asked.
Is she armed?
Nathan tried to get a better look.
I don't know.
Josiah could not see without giving himself away.
If she sees us, she could bring the rest of them down on us.
Men.
Rain rolled her eyes, wondering how two intelligent men could be so utterly useless in a survival situation.
Just wait here.
Rain stepped into the corridor, allowing Charlotte to see her.
Rain.
Nathan hissed, but she ignored him and continued walking. Charlotte reached for the phaser on her utility belt and pointed it in Rain's direction. The transporter chief had no doubt it was set to kill. Since the aliens could not take her over like the others, Rain doubted they would want to keep her prisoner.
Don't move.
I'm not armed.
Rain raised her hands, inching closer until she was near enough to act. Nathan watched in horror, wondering if Rain had some kind of plan or was she genuinely in trouble. He forced himself to trust the woman who so far proved herself to be quite extraordinary.
What is she doing?
Nathan could only shake his head in bewilderment.
You are the one,
Charlotte said when Rain was close enough.
You are the one who rejects us.
No.
Rain shrugged her shoulders.
I just share my body with enough voices as it is. It's getting crowded in here.
Before Charlotte could respond, Rain kicked out her foot with an effective high kick that connected with the delicate part of Charlotte's wrist. As Charlotte cried out in pain, the phaser went flying across the corridor, landing not far away from Nathan. Before Charlotte could react, Rain threw a roadhouse punch across her jaw, knocking her out cold by the time she hit the floor. As Charlotte landed with a thud, Rain took a step back, relieved her gambit had worked. When she turned around, both Josiah and Nathan were staring at her with unmasked jaw.
If you want something done right, you just gotta do it yourself.
Chapter 8. Chess Pieces. Moments when Ezra Standish could truly consider himself happy were rare. Elation did not come easily to him, nor did exhilaration. He realized nothing could ever really leave him in awe with his jaded perspective and accepted this character trait as a factor to his excellence as an investigator. However, there were still occasions when he wished he possessed a little idealism amidst all his cynicism. When he met Julia Pemberton, what struck him most was her unfailing ability to see a solution through any calamity. There was no such thing as impossible when she set her mind to it, and the tenacity upon which she approached any obstacle with that damnable optimism touched him deeply. Ezra was in love with her even before that first date, and though he tried not to get swept away in the thrall of what poets and artists described throughout the ages, the security chief had little choice in the matter. Now she had come to him, and together they shared the most heated session of lovemaking he ever experienced in his life. Ezra could still feel the heat of their coupling sizzling off his skin. She lay in his arms with her fiery red hair against his chest. As he breathed her scent, his head swooned knowing he was truly happy. It was not the intimacy that created this euphoria but the fact he had no desire to slip away quietly as he had done to previous lovers. No, Ezra wanted to stay. He wanted to watch her sleep and dream her dreams, and when she awoke, he would run his fingers through her silky hair and tell her he loved her and had from the beginning. For the next few hours, Ezra wished to drown in the sight of her while composing odes to their love in sonnets to rival the great bard himself. A blind man would notice just how besotted he was, but for once in his life, he did not mind. If he was love's fool for all time, Ezra didn't care as long as he was hers. Julia Pemberton was not asleep. She was not even in the room, while her lover painted his beautiful thoughts in his mind, reveling in the afterglow of their passion. The entity who took possession of Julia's body remained still, considering the next course of action in the hijacking of a maverick. The many had set the stage, and the players were almost in position to play their endgame. She felt little for the human behind her, aware the most ancient of arts kept him distracted. Strange how helpless the dire were to their body's needs until their judgment became wholly impaired. She watched the clock, feeling it tick inside her head as audibly as it might have in reality. Soon, the call would come. She had no wish to hurt the man behind her. They did not intend to hurt anyone, but wars were seldom won without casualties. She would do what was necessary and nothing more. The aim here was to return home and feel the sands of the homeworld beneath their feet one last time. Perhaps even see what happened to their race after their exile. After so many years of immortality, the concept of death was not at all frightening to the many. In fact, she considered it the prize at the end of this last quest. After 500,000 years of life trapped in their prison in space, immortality was a curse.
Right on cue, the comm badge tucked amongst her discarded clothes sounded with a soft trill, giving her the excuse to wake up. She heard Ezra express some annoyance at her slumber being interrupted so abruptly. A stray thought crossed her mind then, more like puzzlement, really. Why did he care what she felt when he had what he needed from her? There was something odd about the feelings he had for the owner of this body. It was almost affection. However, for her to believe this Dia was capable of that emotion would require dismantling everything she knew about his kind, and she was not prepared to do that. Hate kept her going for so long. Hatred for the Dia who imprisoned her and all the others. It filled the hours that crawled for the eternity they were floating through the stars. For 500,000 years, they thought of nothing else but freedom and with it, revenge, grown fierce and powerful with each second of captivity.
Damn.
Julia feigned annoyance, pretending to wake from a fitful slumber when all she had been doing during this heated session of intimate play was waiting for it to be over. The physical coupling had not been unpleasant. Had she indeed been the woman whose name he gasped each time he reached completion, it might have been enjoyable. As it was, the exchange of fluids did little to move her.
Ignore it.
He coaxed gently, brushing her bare back with small kisses, partially exposed by the sheets.
You can say it was malfunctioning.
I have an EPS conduit that really needs looking at.
She pulled away from him reluctantly, continuing the charade.
I couldn't ask anyone else to take care of it because they've been pulling double shifts as it is.
She planted a kiss against his lips, her hands running across his jaw the way someone who loved him might do. Being predictably male, he found little difficulty believing she was anything but sincere.
I know,
Ezra answered, propping his head on one hand as he watched her shift through her clothes on the floor once she left the bed. Ezra ran a hand across the space where she had lain, savoring her lingering warmth against the sheets.
But I must insist that when we go to Pacifica, we leave the accursed things behind. Knowing our captain's propensity for trouble, he would be just inconvenient enough to require my attention.
Your wish is my command.
She smiled and started to dress.
Julia?
Ezra asked after a pause. Now that the heat of the moment had passed and his mind was calmer, he had questions.
Why now?
She looked at him.
I don't understand.
Well, if I may point out without seeming as if I were looking a gift horse in the mouth, you have been reluctant to consummate our relationship. I thought you were waiting for some special moment, and while I could have endured waiting for just a little longer, your change of heart surprised me.
Julia considered what she had to say and drew upon the words in her host's memory.
Ezra, I love you. We almost died in that last battle. I don't want to be like Inez and Captain Castile, waiting for things to get better so they could finally start their lives. Is there a need for an occasion to show each other how we feel? I asked myself, what good are the special moments if we wait too long to experience them?
As always, you are wiser than I.
A dimpled smile crossed his face.
Well, I suppose if you are to leave me, I might as well see what is happening on the bridge.
There was little or no expression on her face at his comment, but she was thinking furiously. Lowering herself on the edge of the bed, Julia answered a moment later.
Why don't I blow this little detail off on whomever I find down in engineering and come back here in 20 minutes? That will give you just enough time to replicate something truly creative for dinner by the time I get back. Besides,
she leaned over and kissed him.
I'm starving, and I'll need to keep my strength up for the rest of the night.
When you put it that way,
Ezra joined her salacious bit of planning.
How can I say no?
Starfleet designers believed nothing could penetrate a level 10 force field and, if it could, a force field would not save you from a creature capable of that. Fortunately, no such entity appeared to test their theory. No sooner than he, Josiah, and Rain arrived in sick bay with the unconscious Lieutenant Richmond, Nathan erected the force field to ensure none of the invaders could reach them. At the same time, he conducted his analysis of the woman. Sickbay was devoid of anyone, including his staff. Nathan suspected no one was concerned with their health when the ship was being invaded by creatures using female bodies to manipulate their male counterparts. Every man on board the vessel was either carnally distracted or dispatched if they failed to be swayed. The enemy had been shifting its chess pieces into position all day, and checkmate was drawing close. Thus, the first thing he did upon entering sickbay was to break open the weapons locker. In an attack,
Medical staff needed to be armed since the most vulnerable members of the crew would be here. Only the chief medical officer was authorized to remove the weapons from their locker, and Nathan was glad to see that much of his access remained. Handing them out felt alien, but it was a necessary evil. While Rain was comfortable with a phaser, Josiah was not. Nathan suspected Josiah had Class 5 weapons training, which was rather average. After all, why would a counselor need it? Once that bit of protection was undertaken, Nathan turned his attention to his patient. Charlotte Richmond lay unconscious on the table as Nathan began running his neurological tests, hoping they would somehow reveal what strange power had infected all the females on the ship. The doctor was convinced there was no virus at work here. It was something with intentions far more insidious, not to mention cunning, than the usual replicative cravings of a microorganism. Besides, he knew of no virus whose pathology was so nonspecific it could make the jump from species to species and then attack only one gender. No, whatever this malaise was running loose across his ship, it was far more sophisticated than a virus. While Nathan continued his examinations on the unconscious lieutenant from stellar cartography, he noticed both Rain and Josiah were anxious by their inability to contact the bridge.
"Find anything out yet?"
Rain asked for what seemed like the 100th time in the last half an hour. Nathan gave her a look and continued working, poised over his medical scanner, trying to make sense of readings that meant little to anyone else in the room. He could not blame her for her anxiety, not when he was experiencing it himself. The fact no one on the bridge had the slightest idea of trouble brewing was pressing against their spines like a blade about to penetrate the skin. It was impossible not to be affected by the urgency of their situation.
"They will come after us, you know,"
Rain pointed out.
"Eventually."
"I don't think so,"
Josiah disagreed.
"I think they have us exactly where they want us."
Both Nathan and Rain looked up at the same time in question.
"What do you mean?"
"We're running scared and locked in one place, nor can we contact the bridge to do anyone any good. As far as they are concerned, the situation is more or less contained, don't you think?"
Rain frowned because he was right. They had been in here for a good 20 minutes now, and no one had come charging and attempting to breach the walls of the force field surrounding them. In fact, there was not the slightest hint anyone was even aware they were down here or cared. She seriously doubted there was any immediate danger because the entities currently rife across the Maverick were probably concentrating their efforts on securing the bridge.
"I hate to say it, but I think he's right. They might have already taken the bridge."
"We can't know anything for certain."
Josiah didn't wish to be so negative, but he could not deny this possibility.
"However, I don't know how much good we will be to anyone if we get to the bridge. What if they force us to shoot? The same people who have invaded the ship are our friends."
Josiah posed the troubling question because he had no will to shoot Audrey if he faced that horrifying situation.
"Well, there are other ways of incapacitating them,"
Rain suggested, feeling the same distaste about shooting people she knew and worked with daily, especially when what was happening to them was through no fault of their own.
"Anesthetic gas in all the decks, for starters."
"That would knock out everyone. Not just the women."
The doors hissed open, and Vin Tanner walked into sick bay, holding a small towel to the back of his head, stained with green splotches Nathan could tell immediately was Vulcan blood. Vin was out of uniform, wearing sweats more appropriate for off-duty hours. He staggered into the room unsteadily, a little disorientated by his injury.
"What the hell is going on in the ship? Where is everyone?"
Vin demanded as he strode in and saw the faces before him. He froze when he realized what they were standing behind.
"Why are you behind a force field?"
His annoyance became alarm when he saw the phasers.
"Haven't you seen what's going on in the ship?"
Rain exclaimed.
"I haven't seen anything,"
Vin grumbled as he came to the edge of the force field.
"Mary came to my quarters and..."
He paused a moment as he searched a way to describe the incident. A part of him was still reeling from the incredible sensations she forced upon him, but another part of him was furious at the violation. For the first time, Vin had some idea of how invasive a meld could be. No wonder Alex was so incensed when he forced one between them.
"She hit me over the head. I don't know how long I've been out."
He prayed they didn't ask for details.
"I think it's safe to let down the force field,"
Nathan told Rain and Josiah, mostly because Vin's injury worried him.
"I can always put it back up when Vin's inside with us."
"Can you please tell me what's with the force field?"
"There's something loose on the ship,"
Rain blurted out.
seeing no reason to hide anything when Vin had not the chromosomes to be affected.
Something that came with the artifact.
Vin's eyes widened.
Does Chris know?
No.
Josiah shook his head.
We haven't been able to contact the bridge. Whatever it is, it came from the artifact and has taken over every woman on the ship, including Alex.
Actually, it started with Alex.
Rain clarified.
What about Alex?
He demanded as Nathan ordered the force field deactivated. As soon as the slight shimmer dissipated, Vin stepped into their sphere quickly. Although technically, Nathan and Josiah both outranked Vin, he was a bridge officer and most likely the one with some clear ideas of what they ought to do now.
It must have transferred something to Alex, who passed it on to the rest of the women on board. I don't know why, but I wasn't affected. Nathan thinks it's because of the symbiote inside me, being Trill and all.
That made sense to Vin, but he still needed more information.
A mob of them tried to capture Nathan and me.
She continued, seeing it required a little more explanation before he could believe how bad things really were.
Led by Inez and Lieutenant Richmond over there.
Rain gestured to the unconscious woman on the biobed.
Has anyone tried to contact the bridge or Ezra?
Vin stammered, unable to believe all this could take place on Chris Larrabee's ship without the captain having the slightest clue.
We tried. They've locked out the bridge and did something to our access. The computer is not responding to our attempts to contact anybody.
Vin's mind was a steel trap sprung, and it was now working at full pace.
If something has taken over the women on board the ship, that would mean Julia too, and she's chief engineer. She has a class 1 rating in computer programming. She'd have no trouble locking all of you out if she thinks you might cause trouble. And so far, I didn't see anything to make anyone suspicious, except the fact that it's quiet.
And every woman on the ship seems to be hornier than hell.
All three men gave Rain a look, and Vin did not even want to comment on that subject, especially after what he had experienced with Mary Travis. As it was, Vin did not know how he was ever going to look Chris in the eye again.
Still,
Josiah frowned, shaking Rain's comment out of his head and getting back to the subject at hand.
If Chris is on the bridge, how could he not know there's a communications failure?
It's not that impossible,
Vin explained as Nathan left Charlotte alone for a moment. Thanks to Nathan sedating her to carry out his examinations, the lieutenant was still unconscious. The physician gestured the Vulcan to a biobed to treat the wounds to the back of his neck.
We sometimes shut down internal communications for diagnostics, debugging, and routine maintenance. We're not in a combat situation, and our present status doesn't show any sign of danger. When things are quiet like this, it's not unusual for engineering to take things offline to conduct maintenance. We have backups in place, of course, but if the chief engineer has deactivated them all, then we have to get to the bridge ourselves.
How do you propose we do that?
Josiah felt like a novice and wished he could contribute something other than more questions.
Any way we can,
Vin said grimly.
Any way we can.
Julia Pemberton and Mary Travis started towards the bridge. Alex was there already, keeping pace with the captain and the first officer, ensuring neither suspected what was about to happen when the others arrived. The helm officer was out of commission in his quarters. The doctor and the Trill were contained in the physician's sick bay. The security chief was at his quarters, no doubt waiting for Julia's return for another session of lovemaking. By the time he had some idea of what was happening, it would be too late. The many would be in control of the bridge. Their people were in position and awaiting the signal to begin the invasion of the Maverick. While their presence continued to go unnoticed, it could not go on indefinitely. The leader had given Julia her orders. It was time.